deal with airplane peanuts.
My guest today for the 10th episode of the Joke World podcast, he's written on SNL, he's written for the Oscars, appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience, Nimish Patel.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
So out of those last few things that I just listed, where would you say this Zoom interview for Joke World lands?
It's a high number four.
So yeah, you're someone who obviously is an amazing stand-up on stage, but also does a lot of joke writing off stage, which I think is kind of unique based on the other people we've talked to. It's mostly just been about stand-up. But when you're writing something for like SNL or for the Oscars, do you ever think it's weird when you put a lot of effort into your jokes and then someone else gets to have the laughs?
No, I don't. I think this is a very cool thing. You still get a very similar satisfaction from it. Obviously, it's not the same experience, but then you're not necessarily writing the same jokes for the same. Like, I wouldn't do some of the jokes I've written for SNL or whatever on stage. It's more okay. Like that, it's for that show, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah. You're someone on stage who I would say has like probably the most relaxed, like calm delivery. Like it really looks like you are the most comfortable person ever when you're on stage.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is practiced, but it's I've always felt comfortable on stage. I never had a stage for anything like that.
So even like day one, like first ever open mic, were you up there still, you know, leaning on the wall and just like?
No, I mean, no. That's come from. I mean, the comfort's been. What's it called? Like I said, rehearsed, but it's also come from having been on stage a billion times. My first time on stage was a Chris Rock impression, you know, it was all black, you know, talking about politics and all that kind of stuff, moving around a bit and really animated. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that it was a phase in my life. What I thought, like, you know, when I started comedy, I didn't realize you had to be yourself. Once that kicked in, it's been pretty chill.
Yeah. So have you always been in New York then? Is that where you started off?
I lived in Jersey and New York my whole life. You know, mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Jersey and then went to NYU. So I've been in New York since 2004, minus like a year and a half at home after graduating. But yeah, I started in New Brunswick, New Jersey at Stress Factory. And
nice.
And then every open mic after that was the mean streets of New York, man, just cutting my teeth.
Yeah. Obviously, there's so much going on there, and it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, city for comedy in the world. Could you imagine starting a career anywhere else? Do you think it'd be a lot harder, or are there challenges that are just in New York?
I cannot imagine having started in anywhere that isn't New York City, just because there's more stage time here than there is anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that not having been to a lot of the scenes anywhere else. And I just know for a fact, Sheboygan, Michigan, Detroit is not going to have, you know, 7 open mics, 8, 10 open mics a night that you can go to that you know about. There's probably like 20 that you don't know about that are still popping, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And the city always had, you know, the city's a mecca of all kinds of culture and stuff. So there's like, you know, like music, open mics, poetry, open mics, like the combo of all of them, and comics are welcome at most of them. So I think starting out in New York, where that was like a big thing, you get audiences real fast because they're not just comedy.
Yeah.
Want to be comedians.
That makes sense.
It was a huge impact on myself for sure. And then any other person that started out doing comedy in New York.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned Detroit because I started doing comedy in Cleveland.
Okay.
I moved to Tampa now, but in Cleveland, it was like I knew of like, all right, I got one on Wednesdays that I can go to.
Right.
And then I got maybe one on a Monday also. And then other than that, it's just like there's like 2 days of a week. And there's a lot that I didn't know about, but yeah. That is crazy.
So I did 13 in one night in.
Oh my God.
I think that wasn't like a regular thing. It was I challenged myself to see. I did the math how many you could do in a night, and yeah. I think I got through 13 was the most on like a Tuesday. This is like 10 years ago, 11 years ago, but I think I did 9 or 10.
Wow. Same set each time.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Not the same set, but like similar jokes. Definitely just going through like a 7-minute set, you know, with 5 minutes, so like, you know, switching things in and out, but by the last set, my voice was gone. Yeah. It was like, I was tired.
That's a crazy night. Yeah. So the Comedy Cellar is your main club, right? That'd be like your home base.
Mm-hmm.
And then how does that work when you're past at a club and you have like a home club, and then there's also all these other shows in the city? Do you nothing. Have like
you could do, you know, every, I think most comedy people know that stage time is the most important thing. So there's, I don't, at least I hope not, that there's not a lot of, oh, you're here, you can't work there kind of thing. It's just,
right.
If you're good enough, you could work wherever. And I'm fortunate that, you know, I can go to any of the clubs and get some time, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, how I first saw you, it was years ago, just like these clips that come out, and it's like, you're one of the most recognizable comedians on the internet, I think, in just like clip form and just like, especially for crowd work specifically. That's some of my favorite things.
Oh, thank you.
That I have seen of yours. And obviously you're not, I've talked to other people about this before, like who love to put crowd work on the internet and their clips, whether it be TikTok or Reels, because a lot of people, you know, the fans like to see that authentic stuff. They know you're coming up with it off the top of your head, and right. You can burn that material without having to burn material. But then the flip side of that, which is I'm curious about, is there an expectation that you think that you're setting when you're on tour or when people are coming to see a show with your name on it, that like they're going to be in the crowd, they might be trying to get noticed or like trying to get you to do crowd work?
I definitely have noticed that people's expectations of comedy are really based on what they see in the clips. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people do expect crowd work and stuff, and I definitely oblige if the opportunity is present. But
right.
I've been it's also a lot more fun to be like I have a few dark jokes that I tell like very early in the set, just to just like oh, you thought I was just gonna do crowd work for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Just to let them know that that's not what they're coming to see. What they think they've come to see, but that's not what's gonna happen. I've definitely had one or two moments where people have been trying to get noticed, but for the most part, people are just like hyped to the experience, and it's always fun to have them expect X and give them, you know, 4 or like whatever, you know, like a completely different experience than what they thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been doing, you know. The set right now is nothing they've seen on the internet, nothing they've seen on TikTok. It's none of the Thank You China material. It's very little crowd work, except, you know, again, like to get into the set and stuff. But beyond that,
that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Is there ever a time where something crazy will happen in the crowd that you know you have to address, and it has a lot of potential for crowd work? Does your mind ever go to like the clips on accident while you're up there and take you out of that, like, oh, this is going to be really good on TikTok?
No, I mean I'm always I try to stay as present as possible. I'm not trying to think of what the clip is going to be and all that kind of stuff, but when I think recently in Nashville, someone yelled that I watch you while I poop. And I was just like,
I saw that. Yeah.
That's going on the internet. You know, that was just like one of those, that was like, you know it when it happens, like, oh, this is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like there's definitely moments in the show that are designated content generation time where it's like, all right, well, I've done 55 minutes to an hour of what my material is, what I actually want to talk about. And now let's give the machine what it wants, and let's give the people what they want, which is or some of what they want, which is, you know, me talking to them, figuring out like what's going on in their lives. And it's none of it's prepared. I just, you know, it's not a secret skill of any kind to know what's going to
do well on in
that. Well, not even that, like what's going to get people to say some wild shit or like
what questions you have to be asked.
But you know, the expectations for me from my end for a crowd is just to be present and attentive. And then whatever happens, you know. I don't go into it thinking this is the TikTok show. It's more
right.
Like if something happens, then it's gonna happen.
Right. Have you done the phones in the bags at any shows, like the
I did it when I taped the special. And then I probably did, but I can't recall any particular moment. Denver, the phones were in the bags, but that's because the club does it. Whenever I do my show in the city at Pig Beach, in New York City at Pig Beach, I lock people's phones up. But that's only because it's usually me trying new shit out, and I want people to be present when I do right. that.
Is that the Comedy Works in Denver that does the bags?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. I've heard everyone's just raves about that club, whether it's I'm editing podcasts or talking to someone. What makes that so different?
It's a fantastic club. I don't think that the phones has nothing to do. I think the phones being locked up is a very small part, but no less a part of what makes them so successful as a comedy venue from an audience perspective and a comedian's perspective. The room is just designed to carry laughs well. People are tightly packed, but yet still feel enough space to laugh however they want. It's almost it's like theater seating. It's like very low staggered.
Okay.
It's not like flat. So okay. It feels everyone's got a crazy viewpoint. And
are there tables in there?
It's like those little school desks that you had like one thing on the side.
Yeah,
not a full table in front of you. So it's great. But yeah, it's like
sweet.
And the elevation's high, so people are even higher. The alcohol hits a bit better. You know, it's hard to say, but all those things combined make for a fantastic club. And the staff is incredible. The owner is great. Like everything is just, it's a well-run shop, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And everything's legal there. So
yeah. And I'll be there in August.
You heard it here first, or probably not first, but I'll be there in August.
You heard it here. Yeah.
Yeah. You heard it here. So you're someone who talks about clips. I feel like the TikTok clips and like how that can translate into real life ticket sales across the country, kind of the way that some older comedians you hear talk about when they first started a podcast, and they're like, I don't know what this is going to be, but eventually they were like, oh, people are coming to my show saying, I saw you from the podcast, and the podcast turned into tickets. Mm-hmm. And then you are kind of, I feel like you're the person that's saying that same thing about clips instead of podcasts to the tickets. So when did that first, like, when was the first time you realized, oh, this is more than just for my own Instagram, this is reaching more than just people who already know who I am.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I can almost pinpoint it exactly. It was, you know, my wife told me to get on TikTok like 2 years ago. And then another friend told me, and then I finally listened.
Mm-hmm.
That's a life lesson, like always listen to your wife first. But I think it was like, I want to say April of 2021 when, okay. I mean, I started putting out bunch of stand-up before that on TikTok and what have you, maybe a few clips here and there. But in April of 2021, like something took off. I forget which clip did, but then I started feeding the machine a lot. And I had these shows lined up in Houston at Comedy Hub.
Mm-hmm.
And I was using the clips to see if I couldn't direct tickets to that show.
Okay.
And it worked. And like I went from, you know, one 70-seat show to 4 200-seat shows.
Damn.
And so I sold out Houston, and then we're like, oh, let's see, we can't do Dallas.
Yeah.
Added Dallas, sold that out on a Wednesday. Like,
holy shit.
Ramadan, like Austin sold out.
Yeah.
4 shows. Like it was just like,
wow,
spiraling. And I was like, now I called my manager, I was like, yo, this could be a real thing. And then we got my agent on board, TJ, and it just went off. You know, I was just talking about this earlier. It was like, at one point I had, you know, March 2021, I had 0 dates on my calendar. By May, I was booked through, you know, the year. Like, it was just crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was just kind of nuts. Like, and, you know, a lot of it was clubs taking a shot, being like, oh, yeah, we got a Tuesday free. And then me coming in and selling out a Tuesday, which meant to them, oh, it could probably sell out a fucking weekend.
Right.
Because, you know, like, people buy more tickets on the weekend, obviously. So it was like a real... Everyone had a very quick learning process.
Yeah.
From myself to agent manager to the clubs, like, oh shit, this could be a real thing. And I'm very grateful for just the opportunity to recognize that opportunity. You know, it was present. Like, to me, it was just like, let me just throw shit out there. I got all this material. Like, I've been trying it on YouTube. It's done a little well, but it's not taking off the way I wanted to. And then TikTok just kind of accelerated everything.
And it almost seems like it's a New York thing right now to be like you, Sam Morrell, like Mark Norman. These are like the clip masters, I feel like Andrew Schultz. Like, these are like guys that are just ripping clips, and they're always going like constantly going viral. Like, even if you don't like comedy, a lot of people have probably seen some New York comedians' faces from just viral clips.
Yeah, I mean, we've just been fortunate enough to be in positions where we have tons of material we can throw away. We have a team or group of people that would be able to edit and clip stuff mm-hmm. out, put stuff up, and you know, all praise to the algorithm. You know, Stabby's yeah. doing great. Schultz.
Yeah.
Everyone who's taking advantage of that, and they should.
Right.
For better or for worse, is putting the stuff out there, and I think that's the that's one takeaway from my success or Schultz's success or anyone else's success is like put your shit out there, and if it's good, you know, hopefully it'll resonate with people.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think this might be a really stupid question, but TikTok and all these reels are like so addicting? Is it hard to have all this stuff like be part of your job, or you have to be uploading your own stuff, and then you might waste an hour of your probably pretty busy day because it's like.
It was a huge tax on my time for 4 months or so when I was doing it myself.
Uh-huh.
And then I hired a team to do the execution of it all.
Yeah.
You know, find the stuff, put it up, caption it, all that kind of figure out a content plan, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously with a lot of my oversight and input, but
right.
like that actual process of uploading and uh-huh. writing shit out was so time consuming. It consumed like not just an hour, like so much of my day.
Yeah.
That the cost benefit of hiring someone to do it all was well worth it.
Yeah. Was it hard to give up the power, the control of your art to another person?
No, I mean, it's not really, they don't necessarily have any control beyond like, they know my passwords and shit, but
so you still pick the jokes and
yeah, I mean, they'll be like, hey, do you want to do this one? You want to use this one? I'm like, yeah. Like these, I know all the stuff, so I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Right.
And I'll give some direction in terms of let's try this one this today, or like I'm not really vibing with this joke anymore. I don't want to use it, or I don't like how I look, or anything like that. But for the most part, it's just like I don't want to say set it and forget it because it's still very interactive with myself and the team, but it is like that. Execution part is off my hands, which is, you know, a huge part of the battle.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Is it a certain demo that's coming out from clips, and then you can tell that, oh, those are clip people? And is it a different demo that you can tell is like, I don't know, just more, they've seen you in other clubs or maybe in New York and they're like here for, because most of your clips I think is more crowd work and off the cuff. So is there more, can you tell when someone is there that has seen maybe your other hour or has seen you in other shows?
And well, then- I do it. I make it a point to ask who's there from TikTok or who's there from YouTube,
oh, okay.
who's there from That's Instagram. Just for my own edification to see like what's been happening.
Yeah.
And I'll get diving further, like which clip was it for you that did it, you know?
So you're doing in-person analytics. Just
yeah. And more because I have the special and because I had the mixtape that I put out in December,
mm-hmm.
I have, you know, 100 so clips that aren't crowd work. Those it's just pure jokes. Wow. And those are doing better and better from the views perspective. Like mm-hmm. they're getting a lot of hits, and that's really what the goal is, right? Is
right.
to let you know that I don't just do crowd work, and it's not going to be crowd work when you come to a show. If you like stand up, you will get a full on yeah. stand up show. You will get a full on stand up experience from when you come to see me. And more, it's becoming just like people who saw like this clip I have about BAPS, which is, you know, a Hindu sect, or mm-hmm. a clip I have about MDMA that I put out at one point. You know, it's just like mm-hmm. random stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And then there's still obviously some people who have come from the viral shitting on a Trump supporter or making fun of the Coast Guard clips and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I still think it's the balance is more towards the crowd work stuff only because yeah. those clips have existed for a lot longer and the virality is a lot stronger. But as I shift away from that stuff, and I'll still inject, you know, crowd work and all that kind of stuff. I'm hoping more and more will be just people were there because
damn,
they saw
yeah.
a joke clip, you know.
That's pretty sick. That's yeah. that's a cool way to do this whole thing and of the comedy experience. Like that's, it's kind of groundbreaking in a way. Like
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, look, I don't like to toot my own horn too much, but I think from a stand-up perspective, and from a marketing perspective, what, you know, myself and a few peers are doing is demonstrating what can be done. And yeah, I'm proud of that, you know.
So you mentioned the album and the special that you just released was about a month ago now.
Yeah. Thank you, China. Yes, sir.
So the album is something that's, I feel like, pretty unique. You know, like, it was maybe a thing that people used to do, then kind of got away. Maybe I'm wrong. Kind of got away from, and then now might be coming back. Just a strict audio album that you put on Spotify of lyrics.
I have two albums, both of which are like, well, the first album is called, I don't know, I don't remember what it's called. What is it called? I don't remember. The one that's on Spotify. Yeah. And the most recent one I put out is called It's Dark and Patel Is Hot. And that is, that's like visual and, audio album. Yeah, it wasn't just an audio only album. I call it a mixtape because it was all the stuff that was cut from the special.
That's sick.
So I did like 2 hours. I wrote 2 hours last year while I was on the road. Damn. and 1 hour I turned into Thank You China. Mm-hmm. And then the mixtape, which is all the stuff that I cut from the hour, is called It's Dark and Patel Is Hot, that I also put out on YouTube.
Was that always the plan, is try to get 2 hours in this year, then do a mixtape and a special?
Yes, that was always the plan. And by always, I mean, like, I think 3 months into the tour, it became very apparent that I was going to have way too much fucking material. But that I was very happy with all the jokes I'd written. I was like, I want to burn it, but I'm not going to just never do it again. I will do it at a show and record all of them and put it out.
That's a great problem to have. Many jokes.
Yeah. Oh, Nimesh in Charge. That's the name of the first album.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it unique? I feel like, because, you know, you listen to other people and they're like, yeah, I craft my 1 hour and it takes me a year and a half for this. Is it unique to be able to pump out 2 hours of really good, funny material in a year?
I have no idea what is unique and what isn't. I just know what I've done.
Right.
Because I'm not a big student of comedy. Like, I know who I like. I've watched a good amount of the stuff that I like. But, you know, I know Sam Morril and Mark Norman can quote, you know, jokes from George Carlin and whoever else from, almost like autistically, they'd be like, no, actually, on this album, minute this time, you know, like Robin Williams said this. I'm like, oh, that's great. I know some Patrice stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So all that to say, like, I'm nothing if not prolific. I just write a ton. And I'm also like, not as harsh on my jokes as some people might be with theirs. So I'm sure other comics have written tons of shit and just done nothing with it. Or like, it's just in a joke folder somewhere. Whereas I'm just like, I'm less precious with, all the stuff. I'm just like, here it is. Yeah. I probably won't commit much more time to making this any better than it is. Like, enjoy it while it's here.
Yeah.
Just listen to it. And if you like it, you like it. If not, don't matter.
So we're saying writing. Are you a pen to paper guy or on stage working out an idea?
Both. You know, it's more like pen to pad whenever I can, if I got nothing else in front of me. Evernote when I'm structuring a set, organizing my stuff. And then on stage, I'm just, I'll say stuff to go, like, in between the bullet points that I have in my brain, like, oh yeah, okay, oh, that's funny. And I just trust my ability to come up with some stuff on the spot. And once I say something on stage, for the most part, it'll remain in my head. And then hopefully through repetition, I'll make sure that it remains in the set.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then a lot of people talk about how podcasting, especially individual podcasting, can help them write jokes or has helped them write jokes. You, I believe, are not a very big on podcasting.
Is no, that by, I'm not.
What is you just, that's not,
I tried,
style?
Man. Look, I had a podcast for a little while called Gucci Turban with my friend Asif.
Yeah.
And we did a few episodes. It just became too difficult logistically.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a Patreon for a little while where I was just Monday nights, I was talking to people, my YouTube fan base, you know, talking to the camera high or not high, just bullshitting and trying new stuff out. And once the tour picked up, it became impossible. It's just like,
right,
I'll be on the show, I'll be at a show where I'm just like, my brain's too focused on the set to like come up with a bunch of new stuff that I want to throw away to these Patreon people. Like, I'd rather just come to a show and have a good time versus I got to deliver a bunch of stuff to you. It became too taxing. I'm sure I'll pick it up again and see if I can't make some fun stuff happen, like if I'm off the road. But for now, it's just...
Well, that's what's so interesting. Kind of what I was saying before is that like your clip game is basically your podcast in a way. If the end goal is for everyone to be moving tickets, no matter who cares, like what the steps are, then like you can do that and not have to sit there for 2 hours a week. Yeah.
If the goal is to, I mean, I'm sure I could somehow sell more tickets, but then you got to advertise the podcast, you know, and it's like, it's just another thing you got to market to have people to come and all that kind of stuff. It's just like,
yeah. And time I'll stick to what I'm
good
at.
Yeah. I'll stick to what I'm good at, which is being on stage and fucking around and writing from that perspective. So
that is crazy that like the two things that seem to work is either 3 hours of you talking or 60 seconds of you talking.
Yeah.
And there's not like an in between there. They're opposite things.
Yeah.
That
it's weird. I've never been much of a talker, which is an odd thing to say as a comedian. I'm actually, you know, fairly quiet and introverted, but the stage is just like an easy way to let me talk.
Yeah.
And so if I'm doing that, then there's no need for me to talk for 3 hours, to make fun of the Prime Minister of Japan getting assassinated somehow, you know, I can do that on stage. I'd much rather do that in a stage context versus like me talking to a friend of mine or bullshitting for no reason, you know?
Yeah. And see the people laughing and enjoying your content with your own eyes.
Exactly.
Instead of just a comment that was like, I like this. Yeah.
Right.
That is a good point. So then we don't have to talk about the Columbia thing, but when you went on Joe Rogan, which is a podcast, obviously, I just said Joe Rogan's a podcast. Obviously, that's a podcast that's very big. And was there any nerves? I mean, you were a little less established than you are now, just because that's how years work and time. Uh-huh. So, like, was it like nervous going in there? Like,
I was nervous about was smoking his weed. I'm glad he didn't offer, because I definitely would have said yes, and then that shit would have gone off the rails. Because I got a fairly light tolerance when it comes to like famous people weed.
But you gotta say yes if
luckily he didn't offer so I didn't have to indulge.
Was he smoking?
I don't think he was. No, he wasn't.
That'd be kind of weird, I guess, if he was.
Yeah, no, that would have been strange.
Yeah,
just, but no nerves. He was just the nicest dude, you know. I had a great time.
Is it when you go in there, is he like, well, you kind of knew what you were going to talk about, so maybe that was a little easier, but it lasts for so long. Like, I always wonder, like, how do you, I mean, hopefully you just get lost in the conversation, but how do you not just keep like for that long have moments where you're like, oh my God, I'm.
Oh, I mean, Joe's great at carrying conversation. And on top of that, luckily we didn't talk for 3 hours. He had, you know, two guests booked that day. So I was just like, I was in there for like an hour and a half or two and we were done.
That sounds terrible to me, having three guests booked in one day. And all
just wait till you get $100 million to talk. You will be
well, that's a great point. I'd talk all day, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you said earlier about being introverted, but you're also a comedian, which is like kind of strange, but also I feel like a ton of comedians are in that same boat. Is there ever times where you're recognized by someone and they expect you to be like bouncing off the walls because you're a comedian, or you introduce yourself to someone and they find out you're a comedian and like, you know, they're like, oh,
tell me a joke kind of thing.
Yeah, be extroverted.
I mean that's the thing. Like, I remember in Austin of last year, 2021, I had done I think 9 or 10 shows in a row in Texas. And on the last night, I decided I would announce that we're gonna have an after party. And I announced it at the show. And then a bunch of people who I just spent my time entertaining came to the after party, and I didn't realize that I would have to re-entertain them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was in that moment that I realized, oh yeah, like I don't enjoy like the expectation people have of a comedian, like in real life.
Right.
It's, you know, I'm like, right. And I did, I mean, I was shroomed out and I was having a good time talking to everybody, but in that hindsight, I was just like, man, I was just on for, you know, 9 hours.
Yeah.
Basically, like, I want to be off for a while. That's not to say, like, if I meet people in the street, I'm not like friendly and cordial, all that kind of stuff. I always appreciate people who are fans and stuff. It's just the idea of constantly being entertaining. I think it also like disappoints people a little bit when I'm just like, hey, man, nice to meet. Thank you very much. Like, hey, I've got a nice shirt you got there. It's never that. It's just like, oh, thanks, man. I appreciate what you're doing. Then I'm going to go eat my sandwich, you know?
Yeah. It's weird probably meeting people with expectations of you. Mm-hmm. And they're just a random person that you don't know at all. And they're like, they already have in their head what this interaction is supposed to be like.
Yep.
It's got to be impossible.
Yeah. No, but I'm always grateful that I get to meet people and people are fans of mine. No one's been an asshole yet. So it's been great.
So you just said Austin was kind of like 2021.
Yeah.
Doing some shows down there. And that's kind of, you know, the beginning, or like Austin's going through this like comedy transformation, like trying to become this big, and is becoming this big third home, maybe even second home between New York and Los Angeles for comedians and comedy. Did you see any of that when you were down there? Do you see like a scene developing there?
I was there just for my shit. You know, I wasn't there exploring the comedy scene, anything like that. I did Dallas to Austin to Houston, and then back to Austin.
Okay.
I think that's how the run went, from what I remember. So I never even had much time to like hang out in these places. I just went, did shows, bounced. You know, that was my run. I could see Austin becoming a slightly bigger scene, but again, like I'm talking out of my ass when I say that. Like I don't really fucking know.
Yeah. So you're obviously part of the job of being a professional touring comedian is the constant travel city to city, like you just said, bounce around Texas, but also the whole country. Recently there's just been like, so like, it's so fucking hard to have your airline just be like reliable. Not that serious of a question, but like, what happens when you have a live event that people have bought tickets for? What, I don't know if this ever happened to you, but like with traveling issues or like a flight cancellation, people are waiting on you, like like connecting flights, you got one day to get to another city. Are there any issues with that for a comedian?
I've been blessed by Delta. You know, I think coming from Chicago to Philly last year, we got fucked. I had a bunch of shows, and I had four shows in Chicago and then two shows lined up in Philly on a Wednesday. And I remember, like, you know, 10 hours before my flight to Philly, like, we got canceled. And I was like the flights got canceled. Like, fuck, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And luckily we scrambled, found another airline to get to Philly. But that's happened a few times where I was just like, oh shit. Like, how am I going to get there? Like on my flight to my most recent flight to, Kentucky, when I was going to Kentucky this, I think it was in March or April. No, it might've been May or whatever it was, but it got canceled like a few hours before. And then I was like, how the fuck am I going to get there? And I had to go to another city and then hire a car to bring me from that city to,
holy shit.
You know, that happens from time to time. I just remember one time someone told me, a very famous friend of mine lost his passport, in a foreign country, and it didn't bother him at all. And I was just like, oh yeah, you just got to keep that kind of the same energy. It's like, yeah, all right, it'll be fine. Like,
yeah,
worst case scenario, the show has to be rescheduled, and you just got to live with that, you know. Like, it sucks, don't get me wrong. You know, I had a bunch of shows get canceled in February of this year, but you know, we rescheduled them and it all worked out. You know, it's just part of the part of the game you're playing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Does it ever fuck with the show when you have to do a whole crazy, like, renting a car, going to another city, and then you finally get to the venue and you're like, oh, my, this is the last thing I want to do right now is...
Yeah, I mean, that I try to plan for travel fatigue in my travel schedule. So I try to be the first flight in and the first flight out. But like first flight in, so I can spend the most time I can at the hotel and, you know, get that travel shit squared away and then go into my pre-show LeBron-like routine of like, I gotta eat, I gotta nap, I gotta gym, and yeah. I gotta shower, and I gotta clear my head. Like that has to happen for me to feel like 100% ready for the show.
So you hit the gym before every show?
Yeah, I try to. Nice. It's just like science just shows it's good for your brain overall, and it just helps me get into like a slightly higher energy state of mind. You know?
Yeah. Do you do that like for just regular weeknights in the city too?
Yeah, every day of a show, I'll try to hit the gym. I mean, I nice. Work out quite a bit as it is. You know, like I try to work out 5-6 times a week anyway.
Damn.
And that's, you know, for health reasons and for brain reasons. So, and so I can look good. It definitely, I don't like kill myself if I don't get to do a workout in before a show, but I do definitely have some kind of superstition with it. I'm just like, if I worked out before the show, it's going to be a lot better than if I didn't work out before the show.
Yeah, for sure. Would you say that you're a health conscious comedian?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I try not to eat like ass. It's so easy to do.
Yeah.
And I definitely have eaten very poorly on the road before. But it ebbs and flows depending on which city I'm in. It's really hard to find very healthy food in Buffalo, New York at, you know, 9 p.m. on a Friday, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And those chicken fingers just call you.
Yeah.
And are arguably like, they're not the worst thing for you, but it's like when you're eating at 11 o'clock at night and eating fries and then going to sleep and all that kind of shit, just all that compounds.
Yeah. Do you, cause I feel like I usually see the clips of you, and that's why maybe I think you're so relaxed, cause you usually have like at least a drink in your hand.
Yeah.
Like during the show, sipping that. Is that like, you don't have to give it all away. Is that for mostly optics? Are you catching a buzz up there? Are you comfortable drunk up on stage?
I think the rumors of my alcoholism are gravely exaggerated. I definitely have some clips where I'm on the shouldn't be side of buzzed. but for the most part, and that I've stopped for sure. Like I don't drink on stage anymore. And I haven't for the most part. All the entire tour, it's usually Pellegrino or water. If I'm having something, it's probably you see me like on the last show of the run, and I'm like chill, relax, things have gone well. Like in Houston, when I did Houston in April, it was the end of a 13 show run where I did like Omaha. I went from Des Moines, Iowa to Houston with like two nights off, over 2 weeks.
Jeez.
And that was like, all right, kind of a celebratory. Let me have a spicy margarita. I'm in Texas. I'm in Houston.
Right.
I'm on a spicy margarita on stage. But for the most part, it's waters for my throat and for optics. You know, it's like a good way to like give the crowd an opportunity to break and they see me having a break and like it helps kind of build built-in transition time.
Yeah. Right? I like when I feel like I've seen a few clips of you like making fun of some dude's drink. Like he'll have like a Michelob Ultra or something. You call him a pussy. That's so funny. I feel like I've seen so many clips of that.
Yeah. I've seen like, I think the Shirley Temple one is my most favorite.
Yeah.
Is my most,
that's right.
Traveled one. But that's, I knew from the jump that these kids were like, they had traveled from New Brunswick, New Jersey to come see me in New York, which is a huge trek. To see me do like 15-20 minutes, and they had like such young energy, and all four of them had Shirley Temples going. It was so funny. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, just perfect.
Yeah, but I had to make fun of them, you know.
Yeah. Is it, I hear like editing clips and stuff like that, you hear a lot about the camaraderie of the New York comics, and a lot of that's like going out and having a great time. Is that something like, is that a ton of fun? Is that one of the best benefits of the job? Is just like your coworkers basically are just a bunch of fun.
Yeah.
Alcoholic.
You know, the tough part with it all is that when we become very good at our jobs, that opportunity to be coworkers gets, small and smaller, you know. It's like,
right,
Norman's on the road, I'm on the road, Stavi's on the road, like anyone, you know, the Che's on, like people who I like come up with and who are friends of mine, who when we see each other, it's always like, you know, like day one kind of shit. But we very now it's like we're on the road, you know, like Jared Freed, like that's one of my good friends, like I'll see him, Ricky Velez, I'll see them like once a month or something, if that, when we cross paths. Otherwise, it, you know, everyone's just slaving away doing, chasing this dream of being on stage, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's kind of sad.
it is a little sad, but it's also like, this is what we got in the game for, you know?
That's true.
At some point it'll be, I think we're in the heydays of our careers. This is like, we're really building something to be the next gen of people who can sell at a theater once or twice a month, and then otherwise just hang out and have fun and build the art they want to build, you know?
Yeah. Is it kind of like a little trippy thinking about like you're just trying to so hard to get to a point where like you're just comfortable and you're so established, you can do whatever, you know, sell out anywhere. But then once you kind of get to that point, it seems like everyone that finally gets there, that's the busiest that they're ever going to be. And it's not even like I get there to relax. It's like I get there to do way more work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not there yet where I want to be, I think. I think probably a year or so away from where I'd like to be ideally career-wise, which is, you know, selling out theaters comfortably. Mm-hmm. But I think once I'm there, I don't know what mentality I'll have. I know the mentality I have now is I got to keep going and getting to that point. But once I get to that point, I don't know what mentality I might be like. Yeah. I need to do arenas once a month. You know, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows
what
it is. I just know that the people who are working very hard, like at the next level or two tiers above, whether it be Schultz or Mulaney or Hassan, like these motherfuckers work their asses off and they go crazy. And then that affords them the opportunity to do whatever else they want to do. And you know, it doesn't feel like work for them at some point. At least I hope it doesn't. And I know it feels like work for me, and it is a lot of work for me, but at the same time, it's like, this is great. You know, I get to travel and tell jokes and see the world and all that kind of stuff and have a great time doing it, you know?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Well, I really appreciate your time today. This was a quick one, but definitely worth the conversation.
Thank you for having me, Jake.
Finding Nemish on everything?
Yeah. Finding Nemish at Instagram, at Twitter, TikTok, YouTube is Nemish Patel. But yeah, please go watch my special. It's called Thank You China.
Yeah. Hilarious new special out on YouTube. I love it. We'll link it in the bio of this one and then put it on the little recommended things during this video. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Of course, man. Thank you for having me. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Yep.
Thanks, brother. Looking forward.